Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Paranormal Collaboration, where true paranormal investigators come together. Real topics, real people, real truth. With your hosts, Bill and Chris Reed.
Hey, Christopher? Christopher, can you hear me?
We are now live.
Hey, you're listening to Paranormal Collaboration with Bill and Chris Reed. Our producer, Amy Green. Sorry for a little delay. I don't think Amy fed the chipmunks, and that's what it was, and the wheel wasn't spinning fast enough to connect us. I think that's what it is. So this one, we definitely got to feed, you know, the chipmunks a little bit more. What do you think, Chris?
Absolutely. They're hungry.
Yeah, they're hungry. You know, it's been a wild ride, and we are blessed tonight to have our good friend, Christopher St. Boothwell, with us
today.
Yay.
And it's awesome. We got to hang out with Christopher and his wife and his kids and everything down at Mid-South. Had a blast. It's just awesome. You know, the most humblest, incredible people, you know, you'll ever meet. If you have not gotten out to meet them, get out and meet them, because, you know, Christopher and Rachel are just amazing, amazing people. And, you know, I, you know, talked to Christopher over the years, numerous times. Chris and I have. Finally meeting him face to face, you know, I reach out that hand of, you know, of respect, and he's like, get the hell out of here, give me a hug, and I loved it. So welcome to the show, Christopher St. Booth.
Hi, Christopher.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Well, that was so pretty, I didn't know what to say. I'm melting. You've made me melt.
No, it was just incredible. I mean, we had all hanging out with you and Rachel and your kids, man, all weekend. It was great.
Oh, your kids are phenomenal. Great kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Great. Oh, goodness. So we
are thrilled to have you here.
Go ahead. You what? Sorry.
I just said we're thrilled to have you here with us.
appreciate that very much. So I thank you for asking me.
Mm-hmm.
So
you guys just got the Haunted Bazaar going on right now, right? Is that the auction?
Yeah, we just wrapped it up yesterday, and that was a crazy one. We had all kind of fun and spiritual and scary stuff up there, and it went great, and everybody seems to just have such a great time, and they get excited about it, and we get excited about it. So it works very well for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I loved the photos of the barbecue.
Yes. Yeah, well, they're still out there barbecuing, actually, right now. Yes.
I want to come to a barbecue.
Okay, well, bring your choice of spirits. Okay.
Okay. But for those who don't know, you're involved in the paranormal. You're also, you're everything: author, director, producer, musician, candlestick maker,
bread baker,
baby maker. You're everything.
Yes, I am. I think I get bored and I move around, but I know everything I do, I try to be obviously very passionate and creative about what I do. And I think I learned that at an early age when I was getting into the film business. And I started, originally as a production assistant on big films. And then I ended up doing pretty much every job, whether it was from costume design to production design to lighting to camera to producing to even a little bit of acting. So I ended up doing a little bit of everything and kind of learning the craft of, every department, which actually helps when you produce it because you kind of know what everybody has to do and go through.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
You have that first-person perspective.
Yes, indeed.
And, one thing I've noticed about you over the years is there is nothing that you wouldn't ask anybody to do that you wouldn't do yourself.
No, I mean, not at all. I mean, maybe do the laundry. I mean, I don't like laundry. I have to tell you that. I just don't like doing laundry. I don't mind cooking, and I don't even mind doing the dishes every now and then, but I do not like doing laundry. I can't stand that.
I'm right there with you on that one.
That's where the little children come in. They have to do the laundry around here.
So you and your brother, all three of you have been really, really busy, and it sounds like you guys have got a bunch of stuff coming up as well. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, we're working on a new project. It's to be a mini series, or I guess like a sort of a Black Mirror, like 6 to 7 episodes, sort of like a scary tales to tell in the dark kind of thing. And it's about attachment. It's about things that you bring home, whether it's you go to a haunted place and you grab something as a, sort of a memorandum or whatever sort of thing as a memory, and that thing has got some kind of energy attached, or whether you go to Goodwill or an antique store and pick up something and you don't realize what energy is still attached to it. And we've got a lot of true stories that are really not only emotional, but some of them are very, very frightening. And it's just incredible, some of these stories and some of these attachments that we've actually, objects that have attachment that we've actually acquired, and they've told an incredible story. And one of them, I don't know if you, I think I talked to you about Amy. I don't know, Bill, if you got it on this one, but the Annalise Michelle box from The Real Exorcism of Emily Rose, we got the real exorcism kit that was in the room when it happened. And that has an incredible story to it just alone. And, things like that we've picked up to tell the stories of the true stories of what happened in the room or, in the case file. And we kind of go a little bit different than what you've heard. We go exactly, the truth, obviously. And we found that, that's actually nothing scarier than the truth. And then, as you unfold something, you end up finding all these roots that lead to somewhere else that actually ends up being scary or even more fascinating than the story that you even began with. So it's kind of like that. It's like five tales of different cool attachment stories, a serial killer car, you know, stuff like that, human dolls, all this stuff. And, of course, we have all that stuff in our house. I had acquired them and did, we obviously did massive research and filmed it and kind of show you what happened and the story behind each object. And it turned it out to be like a really good Twilight Zone. I mean, incredible, but a very scary Twilight Zone. So that's what we're putting together, and it's called The Attached.
Mm-hmm. Now, we actually saw the trailer for that when we were at Mid-South, and I'm really excited to see what you guys do with that because it looked really good. It really did.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, the part you saw was what we saw. We had filmed down at St. Albans Sanatorium, and that place is full of crazy energy.
Right.
I've never really been to a place that has been really dark, except for I thought St. Albans. I'm not saying demonic. I'm saying dark. You know, which means, you know, on the more serious side, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where if you're not together, you could take it, obviously, in a dangerous way. The Exorcist House, of course, we were the first ones to do the real Exorcist House, and that place has got terrible energy in it, terrible energy. You know, those kind of places like that. Of course, Waverly Hills has sad energy in it. Not necessarily. I didn't really get too. I mean, dark and in sense of violence and possibly. You know, it was all kind of satanic stuff that was being done when it was abandoned and maybe a couple of, you know, scary things that had happened in there, but it's more of a sad, oppressive energy. But, you know, I guess St. Albans is a very dark energy there because St. Albans actually has 15 real isolation cells that are in there that you can go into.
Yeah.
And it's pretty crazy there.
You feel so helpless when you go in there because, I mean, you get in, these doors are huge thick. And then when you close the door, there's big old bolts that go up. One goes up into the ceiling, one goes down into the floor. You're talking about feeling helpless just to let them lock you in there for a minute so you get in a sense of it. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, that was a little, almost more than what I could take. But it was still interesting to see.
Well, I mean, I think that's where Rachel had picked up an attachment there. Which we believe is to be a patient, a former patient that was there, which is some of the story that you probably saw down there on Rebecca, the girl that had hung herself there, the woman that had hung herself down at St. Albans. So we kind of go into a very emotional and tell their story from a very emotional and I guess more of a victim side. We tell the victim's story of it. And, you know, obviously it gets through the scary roller coaster ups and downs. But we're just very excited because what we, you know, so far what we've put together is just so truly, it's like watching a real Penny Dreadful or something, you know. It's not like a reality show. It's what we've put together is like, you know, like a serious Penny Dreadful feature film broken into five segments. So it's pretty cool.
I'm sorry, Bill. I think I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. You know, I mean, I know you're very passionate about what Christopher does, and you're, you know, and as we all are. You were the one who was able to sneak away from the table at Mid-South to go and see that trailer. You know, Chris and I got to see the box after he brought it out, which was amazing.
Right.
To have something like that. And, you know, and Christopher, you and I spoke a little bit, and Rachel, I mean, you know, bringing in these different objects. But now that I understand what you're doing with this little segment of attachments and these stories and do them, as you know, in the dark mirror, it's interesting because, you know, going in, you know, we're more the paranormal investigator when we go in to do stuff. That's what we do. And it amazes me. You know, the people who invite an attachment these days so that they can make a name for themselves. That's insane.
That's scary. That's scary.
Well, yeah, I mean, I agree. But the thing is that, you know, I've been around for quite a bit in the paranormal business since at least, I think our first paranormal film happened before Death Tunnel, which was shot exclusively at Label Sanatorium. Then Spook came out of that, which was a documentary of what it was like to film, you know, a movie in a real scary place, and Sci-Fi had picked that up. But before that, we did a film called Dark Place, and that was shot at a place, if you guys know of Linda Vista Hospital down in California, in Los Angeles, California. That is an old,
yeah,
like 30s old hospital. We actually shot a horror movie there before we even knew anything about the paranormal, and we were seeing crazy things when we were filming that. We didn't really think too much about it, but we saw a little girl running around down there. We didn't think too much about it, and then of course the next big film we did was Death Tunnel on Sony Pictures, which was shot exclusively at Wayville Sanatorium. At that point, that is when it opened up my mind and my eyes, saying, oh my God. And it's like, I always say this, but when you first experience your first paranormal adventure, you're hooked. You know, I mean, if it calls out to your soul, you're hooked. You can't get out of it. Because it's like seeing something so spiritual and enlightening, you can't brush it off anymore. It, especially if you have a lot of passion and empathy and it really soaks in, you can't get rid of it. Now you're part of its journey.
You know, exactly. And the way you do things is very always, you know, I admire it in the paranormal, because you take these stories and you do the research and you do the history and you make, you know, you take the factual side and bring it to life, rather than most people, you know, like to take and bring the legend and the glitz and the glamour side of it. But you take and make, you know, that raw and dirty side of it, so to speak.
I mean, exactly. Like, I mean, when you were doing, you know, like the Seeker Wonder, and we did the show The Possessed, I mean, we were literally researching Lucy Benham and Mary Roth, the two girls that, you know, were possessed, and Mary Roth taking over Lucy Benham back in 1878, classified as the first ever reincarnation or the first truly possession. And the thing is, when you did more research about it, which is what we had done, we had found out the father was the sheriff of the town, and inside one of his houses, he actually, one of the people lived there actually put a child inside the oven and burned the child alive, and another one had hung a child. So these are the things that you start to find out that happened, that's amongst already these sad, horrific legends or true stories or whatever. You go out, everything is a legend until you start to find out the truth. You know what I'm saying? Like, people say, oh, this happened. So you go, well, let's find out what, like, say you've heard of Gore Orphanage Road, right? Have you heard of that story, Gore Orphanage Road, which Children of the Grave was kind of based on? Gore Orphanage Road is a real road, but there was never any proof there was a Gore Orphanage. But there was a road called Gore Orphanage Road, which is kind of weird. So when you do the research behind that, you'll find four stories, totally different stories. One of a school setting on fire, one of something else happening, one of the doctor trying to bring back his four children that all died of diphtheria, and he buried them all within a year in his backyard at the Swift Mansion. And you put all these stories together, that created the story behind the Gore Orphanage. So the Gore Orphanage is not true, but the stories that inspired it is. So we kind of go that direction, and it's fascinating.
And it is, and to do that type of research and that type of learning and to tell the story in the correct manner, I think helps bring, I don't know, Chris, what do you think, bring peace
to the spirits? Absolutely.
Well, that's what we hope for. That's, you know, I mean, nobody ever, you know, says to me, did you cross them over? Well, you know, I'm saying I'm not like a person that, you know, goes out there and say, hey, I mean, I can say it, but I'm not like this sensitive or somebody that reaches out and say, you know, I'm going to sit down and pray with you and I hope that you go, you know, to the light and all that. I try to put those energies out. But what I feel that we do is we try to find it as much as we can in the truth and try to tell the story in respect and give them, if they've lost their name, try to find their name again, say on a gravestone that is unmarked, only has a number. Try to find out what their name was and kind of say, this gravestone now belongs to this person. This is the name, you know, and try to restore, you know, its identity. And I think once you restore its story and identity, I think it has a good chance of moving on. That's what I believe anyway.
That's actually really nice. That's really good. That they're recognizing them, and you guys bring, even though the story is scary and what happened to this is this, you bring a human element to everything that I've ever seen that you guys have done. You know, from death.
Well, I remember when I remember when I went down to Los Angeles and I just left Kentucky. In my cowboy boots, somebody gave me these cowboy boots, and I had mud from the death tunnel all over my boots. I jumped in an airplane, flew to Los Angeles, and went to the American Film Market to pitch it to Sci-Fi, and I had those same boots with that dirt from Waverly Hills on my boots now walking into the film market, and the passion was so much there. I remember what Sci-Fi said to me. He goes, we don't even have to show any evidence. We just love the way you tell a human element to this. We love the human story, kind of like, you know, an Oprah Winfrey paranormal, you know. And we like the human side of it. And they didn't even want any evidence. They didn't want the apparitions or the EVPs from us. They just wanted the story from us, even though, you know, EVPs and any evidence comes along pretty much when you spend a lot of time out of place. I remember when I went to Waseca Wonder House, the Mary Roth House in Waseca, Illinois, doing our film The Possessed on Sci-Fi. We went in there, and it was just four people, all men. They were all men. And we came back, and we heard this when I got back to Los Angeles to kind of go through our footage of the interview. There was an EVP of a girl saying, Mommy, why is Daddy doing this to me?
Oh, gosh.
As clear as day. And so what do? You know, now you hear this, it's almost like here's your sign, here's your cry for help. So what we did is we arranged another trip back and sat in there and tried to find out what this EVP, who this EVP and why it came from, and focused on that. We always try to say that our scripts or, I guess, our storyboards of our documentaries and films are based on things that we find along the way of researching it. So basically, it's really the spirits, the ghosts that are writing the scripts to our shows. Because if we're down there and we get this EVP, then we turn direct and say, we need to research more of this now. It's not, no, let's just stay on this path because, you know, this is selling or the demons are selling. Let's go that direction, like a lot of these TV shows do. We've kind of follow, you know, what is like a breadcrumb path, and they leave clues for us to go and which direction to turn in the show. And that's, we pride ourselves in all our shows that we've done that too.
Mm-hmm. You know, and that's what makes what you do so unique, because, you know, Chris may encounter a spirit and feel their energy, and she tells their story through the energy she feels. You know, I may catch an EVP, or, you know, Amy may catch a photograph or whatever, and those are all bits and pieces of their story. You're actually, and I love what you said, that they are writing their story. That's powerful.
It is, and it's, they're the stars, by the way. They're what our show's about. It's not about, with all due respect, and I'm not, you know, going yay or nay, I'm just saying it's not about the ghost hunters, and it's not about the locations. Even though actually locations could play into a very haunted location, could play into it. But it's really about the energy that inhibits in these places. So we try to, you know, obviously make you know, the well, obviously the stars of the show is the story, is the people that are lost. The lost souls are the stars. And I've always wanted it that way, and I've tried to keep it that way. Every now and then you've got to stick your head out and do an interview, I suppose, and talk about it. But I'm far much happier behind the camera than I am in front. I mean, many shows, people have come to us and you know, wanted me and Phil to do a reality show in the sense of, you know, follow me and throw around and do these things. And I don't mind that, but the thing I did mind is when they would ask us to do things that I would never do. I have to be honest with you, like possibly like I'm breaking into a trailer to find evidence. I would never break into a trailer. I would never do this or whatever they ask you to do to make it more dramatic.
You have to keep it real. When
hello?
Hello?
What
happened?
It did what it did last
week.
Just cut me off.
Christopher,
are you still with us?
No.
I'm here. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, Christopher's there.
A little bit
of technical difficulty
there.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry. For some reason, we had technical difficulty. And can you hear me okay, Christopher?
Yes, I can. I can.
Okay, Christopher, I have a you know,
okay.
When you talk about, you know, them wanting you to do something that you wouldn't do, you know, that speaks volumes about your character, you know, because Chris and I have, and Amy have all been approached, you know, over the years, hey, do this, do that. But you want to do what you're doing, and you have the venue to do what you want to do in the way you do it. And that's powerful. And it's why I respect you so much. And you have such
a kind
heart and kind spirit in what you do. You do everything out of you really do. You do it out of love. You're such a gentle soul.
Well, I try. I mean, being a producer and it's hard because a producer has to cut corners, you know. And then here you're trying to be fair to everybody. It's hard. You know what I mean? At times.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult. I remember I did a music video back in the 90s, and I played Jesus in a rock and roll music video. And I remember because not only I was the singer in the band that did this
mm-hmm.
music video, but I was the producer too. So here I am on the cross being crucified, saying, you know, all the extras, 40 extras in the crew, and I'm saying, you know, here's Jesus saying, hey, everybody eats, everybody's happy. But the producer side is, oh, we can't afford that. You know, they can't do that. They can't do that. So it's like, it's so hard to be an artist and a producer. You know what I mean? It's difficult.
Yeah.
But I think we've worked hard enough and focused enough to be able to do kind of what we want to do. And we've built quite a following and a fan base. And, you know, luckily, most everybody gets it. You know, and I'm not interested in doing something. You know, people would approach me and say, let's go do this. And I go, well, that's already been done. You know, why would you think of doing the same thing? Why would you do that? I don't get it. And let's do this instead. You know, let's do something that's never been done.
Mm-hmm.
So.
No, and that's the key. Now, you know, you talked about attachments and you talked about, you know, what you feel that Rachel had an attachment. How did you deal with that?
It was hard. I've never really gotten attachment, except I've had an experience when I was, we did the Exorcist diary, the Exorcist file, the show that Destination America actually ended up, they actually licensed it and put it on the air a couple of years ago. And we actually, yeah, we actually shot it in 2000. Thank you. We actually shot it in 2010. Mm-hmm. And we were the first ones to go into the house. This is before Ghost Adventures or Ghost Asylum, anything like that happened. We did it first, and then I remember playing. We released the show theatrically in St. Louis, where the Exorcist happened, and it was two sold out nights in the theater. It did really, really well for us. And on the way that night, I stayed in one of the hotels downtown St. Louis. And something attacked me in that hotel room, pulled me out of the bed. I saw a very dark shadow that looked like, I want to say Hellboy, because they had like horns that were sanded down. It was really weird. And it pulled me out of bed, and I got three scratches on my foot where it grabbed me and pulled me out of bed. And that was the first time anything like that violently happened. Because I did find out the hotel room was presumably haunted, because on my way out, the desk clerk said, I was asking, is this room? He goes, it's haunted, isn't it? And I go, yeah. And he goes, well, yeah, your room is haunted. I wish I would have knew that before I checked in, you know. But apparently Al Capone shot the whole floor up back in the Prohibition days in St. Louis and killed a lot of people on that floor. And it was, again, creating dark energy. And I, you know, maybe my manifestation of what I had been doing with the Exorcist story created the darkness out of the manifest of the dark energy, which is a very, you know, a very intelligent way to look, I think, at it, because you kind of create what's in your life. You know, you do that positively and negatively. It's like a law of detraction as well as attraction. It's where you are. The great Barry Taft said, he never believed that a place was haunted. He believed people was, and they brought it with them. They walked into a room and they opened up a door because it was about them. It was the energy they were carrying, and then the room or the location became a vessel to them. And I agree with that, a lot of that. You create. Many people can go to the same place and have different experiences. There are a lot of people that see nothing but demons. And there's a lot of people that don't see demons at all. They see the, you know, the trapped children and the other side of the spectrum. So I kind of try to go in there with an open mind, and, you know, that gut intuition kind of tells you which way to turn, you know. That's why you have it. You have that gut intuition for a reason, so you should listen to it.
Mm-hmm. With you saying that, that's pretty interesting, because, you know, Chris, I, Amy have talked a lot about this while we're on the road traveling, that certain places, you have an experience at a place. And that experience doesn't necessarily mean that when you walk in there and you walk into this hotel, and I could stay in that same room and have a totally different experience. That was your experience. So, so many people in the paranormal go to these locations saying, oh, I saw this happen on TV, or I saw this happen in this documentary. And that's where their focus is.
And they manifest that energy.
And also, but yeah, it's also, it's a 50-50 of mass hysteria. I mean, there was that story that happened, I forgot whether it was in Thailand or somewhere, where 100 school kids saw a black shadow that pulled their hair and attacked them, and it happened to 100 children, and they believed it was a mass hysteria that created it, meaning that it was a sense of, you know, belief, over belief that created it. Whether it was real or not, it was real enough to them. And you don't really want, you know, if you know there's a spirit named Jack in a place, the first thing you're going to say is, guess what, I saw Jack. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
If you didn't know there was a Jack there, maybe you wouldn't see Jack. You know what I'm saying? So it's best to go in there somewhat blind sometimes, you know, so that you experience it as a virgin, so to speak, of the location. So you come up with everything, and then after you've experienced it, then cross-reference your notes with what other people have seen, and even on some of the history and some of the legends. And that way you aren't, you know, kind of brainwashed. You know, it's like, I don't know if you've heard this, it's another fascinating, I have so many interesting, fascinating things I have learned from the masters, such as, you know, you guys and people out there that do great work, like, say, like, people that develop, you know, digital dowsing machines and all those kind of stuff like that, the electronic ones. There's, you know, proof is that a lot of these machines, these that are reading the, you know, so far the, you know, the EMF meters or the ones that talk or, you know, the ovuluses and whatever, are they really reading the energy? Are they reading you? If you walked in there and you knew there was, you had heard there was a ghost named Mary, and suddenly it says Mary, is it reading the room or is it reading your energy? You see what I mean?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Because it cannot be any more far-fetched than reading a ghost energy than reading your own energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's kind of like, I don't believe in aliens, but I believe in ghosts. That's silly. If you believe in, you know, kind of got to believe in a little bit of everything or don't believe in it at all. You know, so that's kind of the approach that I take to it. And so it's like, it makes it very calm and very easy to put together in the sense of, because when you're in a room and then stuff starts going crazy, like, oh my God, we went back to St. Albans, you know, and we got a girl that said, I know what you did. I mean, just like a class A+3. It was incredible, EVP. I know what you did, she said. And then we got a baby crying. And, you know, of course, you know, it was in the concept of the room of where the baby was supposedly being hidden in the wall. So, I'm just excited when we get stuff, but we get it because we work hard at it. We don't just, you know, sometimes we do get very lucky. I think all of us have gone into a place and it's been very highly active. And then we've gone into a place and we've sat there literally for 3 days and nothing has happened, you know? So, I love what we do. You know, I just love what we do. And I don't love it when I'm told what I have to do, because I think it takes. I know it kind of. I'm not trying to sound bitter. What I'm trying to do is that I think we all have to get into tune to finally, especially as you get older, what makes you happy and what makes you tick, and then you should focus on that, and hopefully you can make a big doing that. Then you should be very happy with your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
When we go into the places, going back to going in blind, mm-hmm. I think it's always best to go in blind. I go in blind. A number of our team members go in blind for any number of reasons. And we have a researcher who does all the research, and she's phenomenal. And then we can go back and reference that. We can go back to that information during the investigation and reference things. Because when you go in blind, nothing is skewed. You don't have that preconceived notion. You aren't taking in an energy that you're producing and manifesting. You go in blind knowing nothing. You don't know what to expect. It may be busy. It may not be. You may get things that don't even come across in the research because it's not there. It's a known entity. Now, it may be something that was there long before whatever research is available.
I agree. That's 100 best way to do it. And you know what? There's also, you need to go in as a human being, compassionate and have empathy. Not go in there and into the provoking and demand, and because you have no idea who you're talking to, none at all.
Exactly.
You have no idea. If you're talking to something that has been forsaken there, or something that is, you know, you know, on the darker side. You have no idea who you're talking to. So you should probably should give it the respect either way. And people always ask me, do you worry about the dark energies? Not really, because as a documentarian or as a researcher, investigator, if you tell the story, you know, no, you know, unbiased, you tell, you don't have a judgment, right? The dark energy is a narcissistic. So it's going to want to say, look at me. It's going to want to be on camera. It's going to want to perform. As long as you aren't making a judgment, that's when it gets, you know, that's where it starts to get where, you know, things get crazy, or things, you know, maybe you have a, maybe your car breaks down on the way, or your equipment just fails or whatever, because you're starting to judge and the energy is getting a little crazy. The idea is to go in there and say, you know, let's find out what goes on. And I'm not here to judge you. I'm just here to tell a story. And you try to tell it as honestly as possible. And so I don't get scared of it, because I think the devil would rather be known than not known, in the sense of, I know that he hides behind things so they can get away with stuff. I do know that, but you know, I've never been worried about that. And I also have to tell you, especially with, if you guys, Bill had witnessed, I don't know if any of you saw, I think you saw a lot of them. Chris, I don't think I've met you, have I, Chris?
Yes. Yeah.
Did
I meet you? Okay, I can't picture the face with the name, I'm sorry.
Yes,
but you saw all the crosses that we have, the crucifixes,
yes,
that have come,
yes,
some of them over 125 years old. I feel such, you know, and I'm not pushing, you know, anything. I'm just saying I feel, what I feel is incredible, positive, safe and protective energy from being around that. That if I truly believe in that, then my belief system will protect me. If you have a shadow of a doubt, that's like leaving a little hole in your screen door and all the bugs come in. You've got to make sure that screen, you know, is completely sealed, that nothing comes in. So I feel pretty positive about what we do and the protection. And because we're involved with a lot of crazy things, and we pick up a lot of crazy, not attachments, but objects that have been involved in some serious stuff. And you have a tendency, you know, I remember when I opened the Annalise Michelle box, I was wearing rubber gloves. I was wearing rubber gloves. I'm going like, why am I wearing rubber gloves? I mean, is that going to protect me? You know, you know, maybe from the mold, you know, maybe from the smell, because box smelled, you know, being, you know, that box is originally from 1897. So, you know, but I don't know. I felt really good energy with you, Amy. I felt really great when Bill and I talked. So, you know, I feel that there's a connection there, and I think that's what really makes a really good investigative team, when you have that kind of connection when you all go in. If you got one person that's a little off, that's when you start getting, you know, those rough drama moments, as well as, you know, your investigations don't go very well.
That's an interesting theory. As progression of time goes, how things change within investigations when, you know, different people are on different investigations with the, you know, what type of evidence you collect.
Energy affects energy. So if you go in with negative energy or an ulterior motive, it's going to present itself during an investigation.
Well, I mean, we all believe that there's something out there, so are we actually saying that it's not intelligent enough to know who you really are inside? I mean, are we really doubting the fact that it knows that you have an ulterior motive to go out and exploit it or to help it? Does it not know? I don't know. Is it shell-shocked and you have to convince it? Or is it like an animal that really knows you're a good, you know, as you know, dogs have a tendency to know a good human from a bad human. The same kind of concept, that I think they know you're there to do the right thing. I know that when we worked at Waverly, over 3 years we worked at Waverly Sanatorium investigating, telling the story of Death Tunnel and Spooked, that when we went in there, we said, please, you know, forgive us for coming in, and we just wanted to let you know that there is a cure for tuberculosis. You don't need to stay around here waiting for that cure, because you figure, why would they linger? A lot of them, maybe that's all they had, and they had friends there. I've read a lot of diaries from Waverly Hills Sanatorium, but a lot of them might not know there was even a cure for tuberculosis, and they're hanging for that cure.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's kind
that's
of
sad.
Yeah, it is.
You know, an interesting concept. I mean, you know, you really, no matter how you're going to tell the story, whether it's through an investigation, you know, when we go out to investigate, we go out to investigate to substantiate, get evidence that repeatedly we could have the same thing happen over and over, talk to other people and see if they've had similar experiences at that location at similar times, try to figure out, is it residual? Is it intelligent? Is it, you know, all these questions, and without talking to each other, we'll never get these answers. But the number one thing is, and you're 100% correct, Christopher, Chris said it too, you need to treat these people like people, these entities like people. Yes, they could read you. Chris could go to Fairy Plantation, and what's going to happen when we get to Fairy Plantation?
It's going to be a knock on the window as we walk up. In both towns, I've been there. As I'm walking up the sidewalk, there's a knock on the window, like, hey, you're here, finally. Energy, spirits remember, spirits know before you're there. They know when you're coming.
You're not going to have a drink with a douchebag. It's just that concept, you know. You're not going to want someone in your house that's a douchebag. And there's enough of them out there, that's for sure. And it's all about sales, it's all about ego, it's all about this and that, and it's a tough business. Look, I'm in both businesses. Not only am I in the paranormal, but I'm also in the film business, so I deal with a lot of the Hollywood, so to speak, investors and networks and channels, and if you drop a point, you're canceled, you know, that kind of thing. And these are the kind of things that you have to live with every day being a cast member on a show, and so you've got to have things pretty exciting, because if they aren't doing exciting and people start to tune off, there's your show's over. So you kind of understand that when you're coming from the entertainment side of it. But at the same side, I don't know how you've ever felt telling somebody's trapped limbo story is entertainment, unless it's not entertainment. It's a lesson. It's a lesson to be learned that what happened to the Native Americans, the first genocide, you know, how the white man killed all the Native Americans and wanted to, you know, just make it all that. These are lessons that need to be told so that it never happens again. I think that's very valid in the paranormal, that there has to be, respect has to be the first notable thing when you walk in there. Otherwise, you're dancing on graves.
Well, if you're ever ready for a team to come in and work on a documentary with you, we'd love to come and help you out.
Well, I'll take you up on that. Yeah, definitely.
You just said, you know, not repeating history. And that's one of the things I think is unique about the paranormal, true investigators, is the history is part of this part of what makes the paranormal up, is we're going back in history, finding out these stories, finding out the spirit story, and what happened and how it happened. And it's part of the problem with what's happening today is history is being erased. And if we do that, we're going to continually repeat the same mistakes that were made in the past. And in the paranormal, we're trying to get to the bottom of that and bring that history to life.
Well, I also think that the world unfortunately, it's not being negative. It's a tough place right now, and the world is changing quite a bit, and we're seeing all kinds of different personalities coming out more than ever with all the media. But the thing is, it makes the afterlife even more so important because, you know, especially as you're getting older and, you know, and sometimes when you get sick, you get, especially going through a near-death experience or something where you get close to it, you start to appreciate life more. You want to know that you're all settled in the afterlife. You want to know it's a better place than a lot of people say it's a horrible place in limbo. Why do people stay there? Why do people get locked, you know, in the other side, and then how some of the people move on? Is it because they didn't have everything in order when the time came? Maybe we should all be, you know, very settled to where who we are and have everything in, you know, have our, you know, our baggage already, you know, unloaded, to have everything in place so that you feel comfortable when you leave, everything's ready to go. Instead of going, oh my God, you know, like a soldier or a child that gets, you know, killed without them knowing it, they're wondering, like, what happened? I wasn't ready. I didn't have it together. That's what paranormal people, investigators, are supposed to help, saying, no, darling, you died of, you know, of this disease, or the soldier, you got shot. It's okay. You can move on. You know, your family will meet you there. That's what we should be doing, not looking for all this, you know, crazy stuff, you know. That is crazy stuff being fake stuff mostly, too, at that.
Yeah, and I agree with you. We got about 5 minutes left in the show. I knew this hour would go quickly with you, Christopher. Where can people get in touch with you? What do you and Rachel have upcoming? I know you just finished the Haunted Bazaar auction. How can they get in touch with you? Where can they get your documentaries?
Okay,
we
have some books and DVDs up on spooktv.com, SPOOKEDTV.com. You can see our shows on Destination America. They're on. We have a new one still playing on Sci-Fi. Dead Still is still on Sci-Fi Channel. Amazon Prime. I think we have 4 titles up on Amazon Prime. Just go ahead and type in the Booth Brothers, and up on your Amazon Prime account, you'll probably find 4 of our films up there, which is pretty cool. We actually hit the road. We're heading to. We're doing an oddity show, which I'm very excited about because of I buy attached or odd type stuff that kind of have a personality, so we're better to get it than an oddity show. So we're doing one actually next week on Saturday, August 3rd. We'll be in Detroit, Michigan at the oddity show. Then after that, we're going to SILCON in Mattoon, Illinois on September 6th to 8th. Then we're also doing a ghost hunt from September 6th and 7th at Ashmore State. After that, we're doing the Great Scare Fest from September 12th to 15th, which we actually are going to bring all our haunted attachments, at least as much as will fit in the back of a big Honda Element anyway, and we're going to set it up for people to see it. I mean, actually,
wow.
We're talking the Annalise Michelle box. We're talking the human dolls that we have. We're talking stuff from Serial Killer London, 18th century. We're talking about all this stuff that I've been collecting the last few months that I even announced I have yet, but we're going to be showing all that. And after that, we go to, we're doing the Toledo, Ohio Paracon on September 27th, which is at the Collinwoods Art Center, which is an old nunnery. If you haven't checked it out, you got to check it out. Think about a haunted nunnery. It's incredible. Then we're doing the Chicago Ghost Conference on, it's in October. I don't know when. And it's in October 16th, is it? Oh, 18th through the 20th is October. We're doing the Chicago Ghost Conference. Then we're doing the Old Mill Paraphernalia on November 9th. And then we're doing an oddity show in Atlanta, Georgia, on November 16th. And then hopefully we'll be able to finish our show and get it out next year, because we'll be filming in between all those shows as well. So there you go.
You got a very, very busy schedule. We will see you at SILCON.
That's fabulous. We must have a drink. We got to have a drink, okay, and chat.
Absolutely. Definitely looking forward to it, to seeing you guys again. It was great having you on the show. Give our best to Rachel and the children. Amy, who do we got next week?
We have Mr. Scotty Rorick next week.
Scotty Rorick next week?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That'll be awesome. That'll be a great show. I think what Scotty needs to do is, if he does match game at SilCon, I think he's got to have Christopher on the panel this time.
Actually, I was on the panel last time. We couldn't do the panel this time because I had my little entities running around. But listen, I wanted to say thank you guys for having me on the show. I love
thank
you guys
so
and be cool. And Amy, we spent a lot of time together at that other show, if you remember.
Yep.
And
yep.
Bill,
yep.
We had a great conversation. I remember our conversations. Fabulous. Thank you so much for having me, and God bless everybody, okay?
All right.
You guys,
you're listening
safe
to Paranormal Collaboration. You're listening to Paranormal Collaboration with Bill and Chris Reap. We'll be back next week with Scotty Rorick. Catch us on the road. Have a great night, everybody. Good night.